All right, some news has come my way via unnamed sources, Seren Petro. I was telling the story about Marquise Goodwin and his comments or gestures to the media in San Francisco. This is a wide receiver for the 49ers, by the way, if you're not aware. Asking how his speed would compare to that of Tyreek Hill's, and he pointed to his tattoo of the Olympic rings that reflected his participation in the London Games. And then Matt Derrick, our buddy from the AP, tweeted out that Tyreek Hill's fastest time in the 100 was a little bit faster than Marquise Goodwin's, 10.19 to 10.24. Petro pointed out to me, though, that Goodwin didn't participate in the London Games in the 100-meter dash. His specialty in track and field was long jump, an event in which he won two national college championships and represented the United States in the 2012 Summer Olympics. So, I like the fact that when they asked him, hey, how fast are you compared to Tyreek Hill? He said, well, check it out. I was in the Olympics for long jump. They didn't ask you which one of you could jump farther. That's pretty funny. But you know what? If you got tattoos of the Olympic rings on your arm, you might as well just, that should just be your answer to everything. It's like, yeah, it was archery, but still, Olympics right here. Check it out. All right, joining us on the show now is our good friend Michael Lombardi. If you haven't purchased his book yet, you need to do so. Gridiron Genius is the book. It's doing well. Michael, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Thank you, Nate. I hope Steven's doing okay. That's the most important thing right there.
Yeah, we hope he's doing well, too. He's getting his head. Look, we all are aware of the seriousness of concussions right now, whether they're sustained on the football field or in a car accident, which unfortunately was the case for Steven. He's got to get that thing checked out. So he's doing that today. He's going to the doctor. He's being responsible. I think he's going to be all right, but he's just got to make sure he's okay. So hopefully he'll be back for you next week.
Good, good.
So let's first of all, how's the book sale going? It looks like you're getting a lot of run out there. What kind of feedback are you getting right now?
It seems to be going good. I mean, I'm just kind of – I had a book signing last night. It seems to be going well. So, you know, it's a long journey. I think the book sales are excellent. It's been a bestseller. So I think you just – you know, this my book is going to be really about momentum and about longevity. To me, this is a book that once high school coaches are done coaching football this fall, they'll have an opportunity to read it. I actually think the book will do better in the spring than in the fall because – most of the people that it impacts in the football industry are too busy to read it or buy it right now. So I think that it's going to have a longer shelf life and maintain, and that's really what I want to be able to do. But I just got a tweet from the great Jason Whitlock, the pride of Kansas, and he told me to ask you about a coach who brought hunger back to Kansas football. What's he talking about?
I don't know what the reference is there. I don't know if he's talking about Mark Mangino. I'm not sure. I
got to get Whitlock straightened out there.
Yeah, yeah. Kansas is actually – so I'm a Kansas alum, Michael, and I was the sideline reporter and pregame host for KU football for, 11, 12 years. And I saw the highs and the lows. I was there for the Mark Mangino era when they went 12-1 and won an Orange Bowl. And then I was there when he got fired and the team proceeded to regress into the worst college football program in the entire country. And so I saw it all in my time in Kansas. So I don't know.
You know, when I was a young scout at the 49ers, and I wrote about this in the book, I was at Manhattan, Kansas one day, and I thought no one could ever win there. And then part of the book, I write about how special teams really impacts programs and what Bill Schneider did at Kansas State to rebuild that program. And I think there's no program in America that should be the worst football program in the world because Kansas is a beautiful campus. I mean, I used to go there probably before you were born when Mike Gottfried was the head coach, and they were actually winning games, and it was a good program. you know, and it's really about player development. It's about special teams. You're never going to be able to beat Oklahoma for the best player, and Kansas doesn't have enough high school football players to support all the schools that are in the area. So you have to always go out of state to get players. But the one thing I've learned in my career is if you build the right culture in a building, and that's what the book's about, you can win.
You know what? I saw it up close and in person, Michael, because and when K-State's won with Bill Snyder there, and when Kansas won with Mark Mangino, they were not doing it with 4- and 5-star recruits. I mean, Kansas – and both schools were putting kids into the NFL, but they were doing a great job of scouting guys that could develop. You know, Kansas had 2 all-pro corners on that Orange Bowl team, and Chris Harris and Aqib Talib, and both were 2-star kids coming out of high school. But they scouted them, they developed them, and they turned into stars. And that's kind of what you got to do, right?
No doubt. And that's, you know, that's, to me, when you get caught up in this whole recruiting thing, you know, we got to get 5 stars, you know, it's just, it takes talent to evaluate talent. And you got to evaluate talent, but more importantly than evaluate the talent, you got to develop the talent, you know, and you got to be able to really, and that's where I think most schools, you know, that struggle. And I think the way you develop talent is through the special teams. And I think that's what Bill Snyder was able to do. It creates an all-in element. And what I wrote about in the book was what Angela Duckworth did. It's about the butterfly effect. Once you can get everybody to start buying in, the butterflies start to take off, and you can build it. And it starts with the kicking game. And nobody wants to give it any time or conversation. But, look, let's just take the Chiefs. I mean, their special teams are so good that they can win two. They're never going to win the defensive phase of the game. But they can win the first, they can win offense and special teams, and that'll win them a lot of games. And the one area their defense has been outstanding has been on third down. So you combine the one area they play half decent on, third down defense, and then you combine dominating the other two areas, and that's why you have a good team.
You know, I am so glad. Oh, man, I'm so glad that you brought that up about special teams, because that was something I was mentioning on Monday morning. Because around here there's been a lot of hand-wringing about the defense. And my point was, and I pointed to a different sport, when the Kansas City Royals won the World Series, they were dominant in 2 phases of the game. Defensively, they were one of the best teams in the history of the game, and their bullpen was one of the best bullpens in the history of the game. They were just okay in most other areas, but those 2 things allowed them to win a World Series. We know this Chiefs offense is elite, and I'm glad you brought up the special teams, because one of the things I think is important, Michael, is perspective. You look around the league, and I'm seeing guys miss crucial kicks, be it extra points, which are not gimmies anymore, or field goals in overtime games and close games, kickers losing their job. And this Chiefs team had a decent kicker in Cairo Santos, and they found a better kicker last year in Harrison Butker. And he went 6-for-6 from PATs, which might sound like a simple thing, but I was watching him, and every one of them's right down the middle, like a no-doubter. And they're weaponizing the punt return game with what they've done. And so you bring that up yourself. That's something you feel like the Chiefs can go win games because they can flip field position and they can count on their kicker. That sounds to me like you're telling me that's a pretty massive feather in the cap of the Kansas City Chiefs.
You know, they control field position. No one wants to talk about field position on TV. They don't talk about it, you know, but when you have to go 80 yards for a drive every single time, it becomes hard. Look, the MVP when the Patriots lost to the Giants, everybody talks about the Manningham, the catch over on the sideline. But really, the guy who won that game for the Giants was Steve Rutherford, the punter. The Patriots never had the ball past their own 24 to start a drive. So they had to go on a long field. They had to put a bunch of plays together to be successful. And what's happened for the Chiefs is, look, they're horrible on defense. No one's going to deny it. They've given up 514 yards after the catch. That's by far. The league average is 250. Mm. And that's double the league average, okay? So they're not tackling very well. They'll get better at that because I'm sure Andy's working on it. You know, their red zone scoring efficiency and their red zone, they've allowed touchdowns. However, they've allowed 7 punts. They forced 7 punts. You know, so that's been much better for them. And they've been able to stay at 27.3% on third down, which is unbelievable. They forced 8 punts. I'm sorry. They forced 8 and not 7. And so by doing that, they're able to do it. Because it's going to take, for somebody to beat the Chiefs, it's going to take complementary football. You're going to have to control field position. You're going to have to make them play on a long field. You're going to have to make them be in a lot of third downs on offense. Last week, they were only in 5 third downs on offense. I mean, really the Grey Cup belongs in Kansas City, because that's the way Andy Reid called the game. He called it in a CFL manner, and it was outstanding.
So, I mean, that's kind of what we're saying right now is it feels like if the Chiefs' defense can just force four punts in a game, that could be enough that the other team can't keep up with them. Is that oversimplifying it?
It is, in the sense that this offense isn't going to maintain this. It's going to have to slow down a little bit because people are going to start jamming the receivers. You know, last week Pittsburgh was just horrendous in what they did. It was really malpractice. They just didn't do a good job. They didn't jam the receivers. They didn't tackle well. Pittsburgh's had over 200 yards of penalties in the first 2 weeks of the season, which is ridiculous. You know, no discipline with them, what they're doing, and then not understanding the moment. I mean, you can't allow – when you have the ball and you're tied or you have the ball, you have to be very careful with your play calling when you play the Chiefs, because if you punt it back to them, they can score on you. So you've got to make sure that you're third and eight. You're not throwing the ball out of bounds on a nine route. You got to make sure that you can convert some of those and see how that goes. So, look, I think there's going to be a water seeks its level position with the Chiefs offense, and people will do it. We saw it last year. They started out fast with Alex Smith, and then there was a period where they struggled to maintain that. I think you'll see some of that. Injuries play a part of that. Who can rush the passer plays a part of that. But I think for right now, you know, open the home opener against the 49ers, this is a great opportunity, because the Niners will move the ball on the Chiefs up and down the field. But is the Niners defense able to hold on? And they've got three high picks in their defensive line. That's what's going to win the game for them.
So for the Chiefs, I'm not asking you to give anybody a recipe for how you slow this offense down, but what do you think they're going to look at next? The Steelers said after the game that they thought, well, we'll throw a lot of different blitzes at Patrick Mahomes and see if we can fool him and see if we can use his inexperience to trick him into some mistakes, and he burned them on that. So what do you think is coming next? What's the new idea that maybe Patrick Mahomes is going to see this weekend that he hasn't seen yet?
I think the Niners have to force 14 to 15 third downs. I think you can't let the ball go over your head. You've got to limit chunk yards, and you've got to force as many third downs. You've got to play really good on first and second down defense. And then take your chances on third down. Simple recipe. You've got to force him into making third down throws, and you're not going to make them all. And by doing that, you've got a chance to get off the field. Because, look, the Chiefs haven't even gone for it on fourth down all year. So it isn't like they're doing for like the Eagles last year. It isn't like they're going for it on fourth down to help their third down efficiency. Because the Eagles on third down last year, they had 117 third or sixes or more. That was ranked seventh for the most in the league. And yet they were able to convert because they went for it a lot on fourth down, and they converted at a high rate on third and six or more. But the Chiefs haven't had to do that yet in two games, which is impressive. But I would say this, to me, if I were playing the Chiefs, the number one thing is I'm not going to let the ball get thrown over my head. I'm going to take away the players. I'm going to force the ball out of Tyreek Hill's hands and out of Kelsey's hands, and I'm going to take my chances with everybody else.
So you think maybe a more conservative defensive approach from the 49ers, and so that would indicate that the middle of the field and the shorter routes will be open, and we'll see if Patrick Mahomes can connect those on a consistent basis, is what it sounds like you're saying.
Yeah, and, you know, look, the ball's not going to go to Tyreek Hill. If he wants to throw it down the field to Tyreek Hill, he's going to see double covers. You know, and you've got to tackle well, and you've got to be able to, and take advantage of everything you can, and try to play from in front. That's the other key component, is this try to play from in front. You know, the Chiefs are off to a 35-6 first quarter advantage. That's huge. The Eagles rarely trailed last year. They only threw 117 passes when they were behind last year.
Wow.
They've already thrown 79 this year. So when you get up 35-6 in the first quarter, you have a huge advantage. Teams are playing desperate on you, and you got to take advantage of it. So I think that's it. I think if I'm Kyle Shanahan, I'm talking about the first quarter. I'm talking about how we're going to handle the crowd noise in Kansas City this week. I'm talking about how we can force more third downs, got to play a certain style, and go from there.
That's fantastic stuff from Michael Lombardi right now. And I'll just ask for your prediction then. What do you think is going to happen between the Chiefs and Niners at noon on Sunday?
Well, I think the Chiefs will win because I don't think that, you know, look, I'm a Jimmy Garoppolo fan, but I don't think he's played very well the first 2 weeks. I think his detail hasn't been very good. I think he's missed some really wide open receivers. Not having Marquise Goodwin really hurts them. Kyle Shanahan does a great job of scheming. There's no doubt. They will run the football. I think this will be a close game, but I think the Chiefs will win because of their home field advantage and how difficult it is what happens to you when you play there, it isn't, you know, the crowd noise forces you into false starts and stupid mistakes. So instead of being first and 10, you're first and 15. And sometimes, or second and 15, sometimes that becomes problematic as you go through the game. And I think the special teams of the Chiefs really make a huge difference. And so, to me, those are the two areas, and I think the 49ers will fall short in that area. But Garoppolo can play really well, and Kyle Shanahan is an outstanding play caller. They have not been at their best so far this season.
We've got Michael Lombardi on the phone right now. You can follow him on Twitter at MLombardiNFL. A couple of other NFL questions, Michael, before we let you go. And I'm not just asking this because I drafted him in my fantasy league. How do you think this is going to work out with Josh Gordon in New England?
You know, I wrote about it for The Athletic. You know, I've seen Josh up close and personal. I've been involved with the Patriot program pretty much, even though I worked there for 2 years. But the Patriot program goes back to Cleveland in 91, like I talk about in my book. So, you know, I think this is going to be challenging. Look, everybody who wants to be a Navy SEAL that gets into Bud School usually can go a day. They can go 2 days. They can go 3 days. They don't quit. But it's the volume of the intensity of the challenge that creates the problems and why you see so many of those helmets in the quad. And I think that's a little bit like what happens at the Patriots. You can't quite keep up with the volume. And if you have any lack of love of the game, if you're a little bit apprehensive about it, you fall short. And I think that's going to be Josh's challenge. Can he maintain it? He's yet to do it in his life. He didn't do it at Baylor. He didn't do it at Utah. And he's never been able to do it in Cleveland. We'll see.
Well, you sound a little skeptical there. The big news out of New England about everybody that reports on that team was covering the fact that his locker is right next to Tom Brady's. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that, look, there's a method to everything the Patriots do there. They don't leave anything to chance. I mean, there's a detailed program. I think what people saw on Hard Knocks with Cleveland would be the 180 of what goes on in New England. You know, there's detail. There's everything's in line. Nobody's talking to the players that doesn't belong talking to the players. You know, everything comes from the head coach through everything, and there's a method to the madness. So there's a reason for that to be there. I'm sure they need to understand each other, and I'm sure Josh needs to see what's going on, and Brady needs to be able to trust him on the field. And that starts with trusting him off the field. And I think if he watches him, I think he'll see what he can do.
John Gruden keeps talking about lack of pass rush, probably because he keeps getting asked about it, but his latest comments leave a little bit of head scratching. I don't know if you saw, Michael. He said, quote, "It's hard to find a great one. It's hard to find a good one. It's just hard to find one. College football now, they're not really dropping back to pass and throwing footballs anymore. They're throwing laterals and they're throwing bubble screens and they're throwing read options. So you've got to train these guys. It takes a little time to learn how to rush the passer. We got some guys that are in that process right now." Of course, that leaves a lot of people wondering, if it's so hard to find one, why you traded one of the best ones in the league away. but also, do you think that's true, that there are less good pass rushers coming out of college because of the systems now? What do you make of what John Gruden had to say?
Well, look, I think it's hard to find. It's always been hard to find pass rushers. I mean, this is not something that's revolutionary. You know, go back to the day of when Oklahoma ran the wishbone. You think there are any pass rushers on the field? You know, when that era we had, you know, were there any guys running? You know, and so college football is not a sport that just inherently produces pass rushers. It produces athletes, and you've got to develop them. There's no doubt. And so, you know, I agree with him on that sense. You've got to develop it, and it takes time. But there is a unique skill, and sometimes you can find a guy that can do it, whether it's, you know, we picked Charles Haley in the fourth round when I was at San Francisco. Did we think he was going to be a Hall of Fame pass rusher? No, but we could see it from day one that he could rush the passer. You know, did the Chiefs think Justin Houston was going to be as good a pass rusher as he's turned out to be in his career? No, but they developed him, and he's become a really good one. So, yeah, to a degree, what John's saying is absolutely true. And, you know, I think what happens is he keeps falling down this trap. They keep asking him about pass rush, and he keeps falling down the trap, and I think he's probably best off staying away from it.
Yeah, probably so. Michael, we really appreciate the time as always. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Nate. Bye-bye.
All right, that's great stuff. Michael Lombardi, all kinds of insight on this Chiefs game. Playing from in front is big, and the Chiefs have done that so far this year. Haven't trailed yet. We'll see if that continues. I think it's something to watch for, what he said. The 49ers, will they try to keep everything in front of them? Don't let the ball get thrown over their head, as he talked about. I also do think, though, It's one thing to go out there and say you're going to do that. It's another thing once you're confronted with the speed that the Chiefs have at the wide receiver position and the arm that Patrick Mahomes has to go out and make that happen. I think that sometimes defenders are playing in a situation where they're not going to let Tyreek Hill get past them, but he just runs right past them anyway. And Sammy Watkins is a darn fast receiver himself as well. So that is something to watch for, though. Do they try to take away the deep stuff? So far, the Chiefs have been hitting deep throws left and right in the first two games of the season. Teams will adjust. Teams will try to take something away. Then we know that opens up the field for the likes of Travis Kelce, maybe Chris Conley, maybe Kareem Hunt out of the backfield. Can they make the 49ers pay if that, in fact, is what the Niners try to take away? Because things will change. The 49ers are not going to come into this game on Sunday saying, let's do it just like the Steelers did, right? That's one of the reasons that it's difficult to maintain the type of offensive explosion that we've seen from the Chiefs. But what we know about the Chiefs is they have so much balance in their skill positions that they can beat you in whatever you're willing to give up. If you're trying to take away Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Sammy Watkins, Kareem Hunt can beat you. If you try to take away Travis Kelce like the Chargers did, Tyreek Hill can crush you. We'll see what the 49ers try to take away. We'll see how the Chiefs counter it on Sunday at noon. Back after this with a weather forecast. Is today the last day of summer, at least when it comes to the weather? Gary Lezak will tell us next.